This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. Today we continue our analysis of some ASEAN countries are coping with the threat of homegrown Islamic State militants returning from the Middle East. As countries share intelligence and resources to fight IS, many governments are enacting tougher anti-terrorism laws that target extremists. However, human rights groups are concerned that these laws may be used to crack down on civil society and political opponents. Jason Lim speaks to Hazik Jani, research analyst at the Rajaratnam School of International Studies, and asks him whether the IS threat warrants the use of draconian legislation at the expense of fundamental liberties.
So now the returnees coming back to this region from Iraq and Syria, there's a possibility of them galvanizing these movements?
The possibility is only low now because of the work of the special branch in Malaysia, for instance, or the Densus 88 in Indonesia and other home intelligence organizations in Southeast Asia. It was only because of the wake-up call when there was a Jakarta attack. And so our respective Home Affairs Ministry have to stay on the ball and have to not underestimate the value of the returnees from ISIS in Syria and Iraq. Because it may seem that ISIS is weak at the moment because they are facing a lot of territorial losses. But in their publications, they have started to recognize that now that they are in this stage of power, they will have to shift their operations. They will have to shift their strategy. They call it a strategic retreat. And this is very important because Al-Qaeda in Iraq, they were facing this strategic retreat scenario when the United States was going hard on them. And a lot of people were underestimating Al-Qaeda in Iraq at that point of time. They thought that there was no longer an Al-Qaeda in Iraq. And out of the blue, ISIS was formed from the basic complacency of intelligence services and so on. So as long as we avoid complacency and we treat this as a serious vulnerability to the region, there shouldn't be anything to really worry about. We have to keep vigilant, that is all.
Some critics and those who are monitoring, for example, civil liberties and personal freedoms, you know, have questioned how big and real a threat these IS returnees are, or are they being used as a boogeyman or being hyped up or being overestimated by the governments of ASEAN?
I cannot basically deny that the possibility of the IS members that they have arrested being used as boogeymen. That is not something that I can comment on. In Singapore, it has not happened. Whenever we arrested somebody, there was a serious reason to arrest somebody. The issue of human rights is something that is very serious. Of course, you know, you shouldn't arrest somebody and then pretend that he is an ISIS terrorist and so on just so that you want to gain some electoral victory and so on. That shouldn't be the case. It will mislead the public regarding the nature of the terrorist threat and will create more skeptics regarding this issue, and there shouldn't be either skeptics or people who are not vigilant when this thing is going on. Regarding human rights issues, this leads to a very important strategic issue for Southeast Asia, which is the treatment of the detainees of terrorist-related criminals, for instance. When you detain someone and you do not provide him with some form of rehabilitation or counseling and so on to find out what exactly made him into a terrorist, and you do not want to basically make him a more society-suitable person, and then what you get is basically people who are detained with real terrorist intent are lumped together with people who are sympathizers and supporters and so on, who had some activities who are linked to this actual terrorist. And so the only way to mitigate the issue of human rights is to ensure that whoever is detained is investigated properly, is given a proper counseling, he's rehabilitated as far as possible, no matter how difficult the rehabilitation of terrorists is and so on and so forth, with the exception of those who had clear intent to cause damage to life and property, who could be considered, you know, people who had the intent to murder others. That one, you will have to recognize that he is no different from a murderer. You need to put him in prison, need to find out what he intended to do and so on. And the difference between a murderer and him is that he had bigger plans, yet he wanted to cause greater damage and so on. It's not that I'm against any human rights or anything, but we have to be fair when we are dealing with governments who have to deal with this issue. So, for instance, in Singapore, the detainees will be released at the moment they show that during the investigation that maybe they made a mistake, that they didn't actually want to join this terrorist group. Some of these supporters, sympathizers, and maybe even members of terrorist cells were not even sure what the cells were up to or what they were in for. So as long as the entire process of detainment and rehabilitation release remains fair, it shouldn't be a human rights issue.
And so are we seeing a trend of governments in ASEAN possibly using the IS threat as an opportunity to clamp down on dissent in their countries or implement tighter security laws that can be imposed upon the general population?
No, I don't see that trend as happening in Southeast Asia. If there are developments in security laws, yes, it is really to address the threat of transnational terrorism in this region and globally. You get to see how Indonesia, for instance, managed to tighten their anti-terror security laws. Really, without those laws, they will not be able to have any legal basis in dealing with terrorist activities domestically that have links transnationally. So these laws actually enable the local authorities to do something about it, to try and stop things from deteriorating any further, because they have more returnees than Malaysia and Singapore.
So Australia and Malaysia recently pledged to share intelligence on the homegrown Islamic State militants returning from the Middle East. This is part of a broader plans to fight terrorism and fortify defense ties. And this, of course, follows members of the Indian Ocean Rim Association, which includes a diverse spread of countries such as Australia, Malaysia, Singapore, Somalia and Yemen, recently signing their first ever declaration on combating terrorism in the region. Now, in your opinion, is this a good move by Malaysia, and what would be the benefits and possible drawbacks?
This is definitely a very good move for Malaysia and for all the other countries involved. Basically, when we are talking about transnational or regional security, one of the main vulnerabilities is the lack of information sharing. Between Malaysia, Singapore and Indonesia, for instance, we already have a tradition of the sharing of information. So I think in the beginning of this year, there was a group of Indonesians who were arrested at Woodlands checkpoint. After investigations, they were handed over to Malaysia. Malaysia had their investigations, found that there was nothing wrong with them, and they were then deported back to Indonesia. So this kind of information sharing is important because, you know, like you have maybe a terrorist attack somewhere in the world, and then the local government may not have the information regarding it. After the terrorist attack occurs, suddenly another government says that, oh, actually, we've been tracking this guy. He was a problem maker in our country. And, you know, without the information to work on, local governments, basically national governments, are unable to detect any of these activities and movements of people from as far as Yemen all the way until Australia. So this is actually very good because it will be the path, basically, for the returnees from Syria and Iraq. One of the ways is actually to get into Yemen, for instance, and board a ship or something that would travel down to the archipelago. And the governments in this agreement definitely will benefit from this deal. Hopefully, it's something that is useful. I do not see any drawbacks, only if maybe if the governments are not very wholehearted in sharing, then you get the same scenario where you didn't have any intelligence or reports regarding these people and so on.
That was Haziq Jani, research analyst at the Rajaratnam School of International Studies. I'm Jason Lim, reporting for BFM.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.